Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Mormon Matters Podcast. We're excited to have you with us. Today's topic will be the Mormon question and its potential showing up again, how big a factor it will be in the coming election cycle. As many of you are maybe aware of, Mitt Romney seems pretty much for certain to take another run at the presidential bid. We also have news that John Huntsman is considering a bid. He is currently serving as ambassador to China in the Obama administration, even though he's a Republican. And he is precluded from actually saying anything or being affiliated with a political action committee that's been started in his name. But it's fairly clear that he's considering a run as well. Besides those two and whether the Mormon question will be a factor in it, we wanted to talk about other things that are influencing the public perception of Mormonism within the media. We want to talk a little bit about Proposition 8 and how that has, helped identify Mormonism in perhaps a different way than it was before. We want to talk about Glenn Beck as a prominent Mormon and his influence on voter perceptions about the church. Perhaps we'll bring up a little bit about the Utah Solution, which is the new law, sort of a worker visa guest worker program that Utah has just signed into law that doesn't go in effect for a couple of years, and it seems like the Utah legislature is hoping to use it as a chance to help frame the national debate and get the federal government off its rear end as far as dealing with immigration. So all those different things will come in, and we're just going to have a fun panel, and I'm grateful to have three great guests with me. I'm going to let Joanna Brooks, who many of you are familiar with, briefly introduce herself. Joanna, welcome to our podcast again.
Hi, Dan, and thank you, everyone, for listening. I blog for religiondispatches.org, and I have a column at Feminist Mormon Housewives.
Very cool. You sure do.
And yes, I do.
All right. We'd like to welcome two first-timers to Mormon Matters this time around, our second launch of the podcast. Why don't we go to Jenny in Wisconsin. Jenny, would you introduce yourself briefly?
Sure. I'm Jenny Nettesheim. I'm in Wisconsin. I live near Milwaukee area, and I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I've got five kids, and follow politics avidly.
Very cool. Good, and we'll talk a little bit more about Wisconsin politics in here in just a second. But it's great to have you. Great to have a watcher of politics closely joining us from Wisconsin. Jennifer. So we're going to have a Jenny and Jennifer. And Jennifer, would you introduce yourself?
My name is Jennifer Liddell, and I live in Ogden, Utah. I have spent half of my life outside of Utah and half of my life inside of Utah. Teacher by trade, but I am also currently a stay-at-home mom.
Very good. It's good to have you. And our political positions, I think, will come out a little bit. For listeners, as we've talked amongst ourselves in preparation for the podcast, this will not be a debate about politics, though I'm sure certain leanings will come out as we do. My hope in getting a diverse group of panelists was that no one would ever be able to say that somebody who didn't agree with them was the person most responsible for framing their position. We can avoid all the straw person sorts of arguments that, well, you were defining me in such a way that you could easily defeat me. This way, if a political position comes up, we're at least advocating from our own position of strength and our support for it. Before we deal with Mormonism on this national stage, Jenny, would you mind giving us the latest on what's happened in Wisconsin? We're recording this on Sunday night. We should be releasing this Tuesday night, so hopefully this will be pretty up-to-date news.
Well, I have actually not paid any attention over the weekend. I was really busy, but I know that on Friday there was part of the bill that was struck down by a judge, or I should say the legality of their the budget bill that had been passed. I should say it wasn't the bill per se, it was the non-fiscal items that they put in with the collective bargaining and that. It actually hasn't even been made legal yet, because they have until the 25th to post it. So there's really not a whole lot of new stuff going on as far as the bill goes, but there has been a lot of action as far as the there's still a lot of people getting death threats and a lot of people protesting, and so there's a lot of commotion still.
Okay, so the Capitol's still under siege somewhat.
Yeah, like I said, I have not over the since yesterday and Friday night. I haven't been home much, and I haven't really listened to anything on the news about it. But all throughout the week, there were protests still going on in various parts, not even just at the Capitol. There were protests in Milwaukee. There were protests at various, legislators' homes. I know that there's been some legislators that have had physical property damage done to their homes during this week. So it's still pretty crazy and tense.
What's your guess about what's going to happen? How do you think it'll shake out when all's said and done?
Boy, it's really tough to say right now because right now that I think that they're going to really try to fight it through the courts. They're going to try to fight the budget bill, the budget repair bill that was – well, it wasn't the budget repair bill. I'm not sure what they're calling it. It's the bill that the legislators passed that, last week, to get everybody to come back home. But it's completely up in the air because you still have the budget to pass. And so, yeah, they've taken away all of those collective bargaining rights, but they have not passed an actual budget yet. So
and it can that, really... Is that it what the 25th deadline is about?
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, the 25th deadline is when that bill is made law. The collective bargaining bill.
Got it. Okay.
That is when it is made law. Like they have 2 weeks to file it and make it law. And the person that's filing it had said he was going to give he was going to file it the last possible date so that school districts would have the option to quickly sign new contracts that would extend their contracts, which would extend their collective bargaining rights, or I should say they're not really rights, but they're privileges to do that. So it's been interesting to watch that because there's been some school districts who have successfully extended their contracts out to like 2014 and still have those collective bargaining options in their contracts. And there's been other districts where they've tried to do that. And, I know that in a community nearby Milwaukee called Wauwatosa, that they actually had hundreds of people show up at the school board and the school board did not extend their contract. So, it's very complex and there's so many different things going on. There's recall elections and, so it's really just a matter of how successful those recall elections are and I know one thing that a lot of us are watching is the Supreme Court has an election. The Wisconsin State Supreme Court has an election coming up in it's April 5th, so 2.5 weeks. And there's a conservative judge that's up for re-election. And so I believe that the Democrats are hoping to knock him off so that if all of their challenges get to the highest, you know, to the Supreme Court, that they'll have someone on their side.
Interesting. Joanna or Jennifer, what's your sense of Wisconsin as spelling anything for the national scene? Are you overly concerned? How alarmed are either of you?
Define alarmed. I think the concept of collective bargaining rights, as Jenny kind of said, being a right or a privilege, is kind of an interesting concept, and how that'll play out in the grand scheme in lots of areas in the future. But in terms of how it will affect the national agenda, I think a lot of other political people are watching the governor to see how well he handles it, to see how far people can push in, you know, where do they draw the line and still make progress or don't make progress.
Okay, cool. Joanna, any thoughts?
Oh, sure. I mean, I've been a union member for 20 years. I live in a union household. My husband and I are both union members. My husband is a union rep. We met organizing for our TA union in grad school. My husband's a labor studies scholar. Full disclosure, I'm pretty invested in what's happening in Wisconsin. You know, I mean, every state in the union faces some pretty serious fiscal crises. Not all of these are of the making of the current generation, but it's up to us to deal with these. And, you know, most of us, you know, who fall on the left side of the spectrum view what's being done in Wisconsin as just really an opportunistic swipe at working people and at, you know, the labor movement. In the face of what are some serious fiscal issues that, you know, there's a lot of give. People who belong to unions understand the problems that face states fiscally. We want to come to the table. But collective bargaining has been the mechanism, the orderly mechanism through which negotiation has taken place. And without that, we have drama and hijinks. So, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's places unions can give, but without bargaining, there's no table to sit down at even. So this is being watched really closely across the nation, and it means a lot to my household.
Jenny, if I remember, your husband is also involved as a teacher?
Yeah,
at least a public employee?
He is a public employee, so this bill that directly affects us, you know, because we're definitely, if everything, you know, goes through, I mean, we'll definitely see an increase in, or I should say a decrease in our salary, because we will, you know, be making different contributions here and there. Although he's an administrator now, and so he's not a union member any longer. He hasn't been for a few years. But, you know, he does deal with a lot of the budgetary problems because of his position in the school district that he works for. But it's funny because, well, not funny, but he's been in education since we've been married pretty much. And you know, both of us voted for Governor Walker, and we both still support the bill. And even though it's going to affect us, you know, they'll still be able to bargain collectively for their salaries. It's just a matter of, you know, things like, you know, your salary, your pension, and your health care benefits, and your, you know, how the work day or whatnot. And some of it, you know, is, you know, getting rid of things that are bargained for that, you know, are so silly when you look at them that I think that the average working person would be just like, what? You're bargaining over that? So it's, you know,
but a lot of it isn't silly stuff. So, you know, benefits.
Yeah.
And
so
it,
yeah.
And all that.
So some of it's a mixed bag, you know, and
absolutely.
You know, I mean, we know it's going to hurt us, but at the same time, you know, we see and have experienced what, you know, when you don't agree with the union, what that does, you know. I mean, there's no way that my husband would display a Walker sticker on his car, especially when he was a teacher. I mean, he would have been concerned about getting it vandalized or whatever. I mean, that's just there is a level of intimidation if you're not if you're not believing in the same things.
Or part of the team. Yeah, I've had the same experience as a teacher here.
And
every 10 minutes at my door, when are you paying your dues? When are you paying your dues?
But see, the thing that is interesting is in Wisconsin, the dues are automatically taken out of your check. So you're not
physically... This was my first time to sign up. See, I didn't have the option to say no because she kept coming back every 10 minutes.
Yeah. See, and there was no option. There was no option. So it's kind of funny because it's, you know... I always feel like, you know, everybody is saying, yeah, you should have the choice. You should have the freedom to do whatever you want or whatever. But there is no choice in Wisconsin about whether or not you want to pay union dues. There is no choice right now. And so, you know, even though, you know, if you don't support that notion of paying those union dues, you're required to. And
so Wisconsin is what's called it's a closed shop state, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a closed shop. And there's different states. Every state handles it different ways. In California, we're not closed shop. We do have what's called agency fee. I mean, there's different ways to come at the problems if unions need to be held responsible, you know, but.
Yeah, and I think
Walker's been so dramatic, and that's why he's incurred so much wrath.
Well, I think the thing that's caused the biggest issue with the bill has been that in his budget repair bill that he put forth, he made it so that dues were not mandatory, that if you wanted to use that $1,000 that you paid toward dues, towards your extra medical costs or whatever, then you didn't have to pay.
Right.
And so the union on the front here has been saying, oh, we're fine with those increases. We just want our collective bargaining. But then within the last 6 weeks since this all started, there have been districts all over the state who, and largely in the areas that lean, you know, heavily Democratic, like the Milwaukee and Madison and parts of Green Bay and stuff like that, that they have gone in and signed contracts extending all of those things. When really, if the school board was on the side of the taxpayers and the people, they would just be waiting to see how this plays out, because really, no matter what, Walker's going to be cutting aid to all of those schools. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be getting less. And if they don't have and a lot of those school districts didn't even include that increase in their pension and their health care benefits. So it's really just... It's really just crazy, I have to say, because there's just always so much changing and going on that right now I don't really know how it's going to play out. We watch it closely and, you know, try to follow it. But I mean, the reality is that, you know, the taxpayers for the average public employee are paying like $19,000 for each health plan. And that's that's really outrageous. I mean, what working person at a steel factory gets that? They don't. So there's got to be some give, and it's just a matter of what that's going to be.
Yeah, tough issues.
Mm-hmm.
At the risk of totally not getting to our Mormon question and things like that, let's just count that as an update. We do have a blog that will always accompany our Mormon Matters podcast, so Mormon Matters. .org is a good place to go. We'll work on, you know, making sure that the tone is good there if there anybody wants to be a strong advocate for a particular position, but overall I hope it's you know, always put to in terms like the two of you or the three of you have done. Just here's our perspective, here's another thing to think about. It's definitely complex and it's just good to be informed. So I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Any more on that? All right, the Mormon question. Here we go, guys. How do I avoid calling you guys? Isn't that just the weirdest thing about our language?
I call girls guys all the time.
Okay. Well, I've
y'all.
It's
y'all.
A strange
I always
thing.
Say, hey, but, you guys.
But it's great to have all three of you on here, and let's just dive in. Okay, so by the Mormon question, what I simply mean is, if we were to put the strengths or the weaknesses of candidates aside as far as their viability as a potential presidential nominee, how much of a disadvantage, or an advantage, if anyone wants to argue that, would the association with the Mormon Church be for them? It was a big question in Mitt Romney's campaign in 2007 leading into 2008 election cycle. Have things changed? If so, what? Change for the better, for the worse, etc. So, Jennifer, it seemed like we had you the least in that conversation. We appreciated the stuff that you chimed in. Do you mind going first and sort of saying what your sense is of the national climate concerning Mormonism as a religion, how it's thought of, and how it might affect the coming cycle?
My general two cents worth is, for any other candidate in any other religion, it probably wouldn't play a big role. But I think that on average, the way other people look at Mormons, I think it'll still be a huge question in the future. I don't think, just lost my train of thought. I think it kind of depends. Like, if you take Mitt Romney and John Huntsman, for example, within the Mormon culture itself, I think that will be a huge debate, but I don't think it would be on the national scene. You know, within our own culture, I think it would be, but not on the national scene.
What do you mean by that? You mean whether Mormons would favor one or the other?
Well, in the stuff that I've read recently, there's been lots of stuff of one's more religious than the other. One claims, you know, I go to church every Sunday, and the other one's like, not so much. You know, so I think that will potentially cause a rift.
Or at least a splitting of the vote. And in your opinion, would you say that the vote would most likely go to the one who's declared himself more religious, in this case, Romney?
No, actually. I think, well, okay. With those Mormons who would classify themselves as more religious, yes. How's that?
Okay, good. Okay, good. Okay, so within Mormonism, you think that will be a big thing. Nationally, you're saying it doesn't matter which Mormon candidate were to throw his name into the ring or become a serious contender, they're going to face an uphill battle, at least because of their Mormonism still.
Yes.
And has it lessened at all since the last cycle, in your mind?
No.
Okay.
I think that... I think potentially it could even be worse.
And what's the factors that make it worse?
And
you guys, the other of you, can ask her
questions.
Yeah,
feel free to answer.
I'm just trying to get a clear sense of Jennifer's initial take here.
I think that in some Prop 8, let's not go there, but yeah, same, that'll help to make it worse. I think that they've had two more years to learn about things and see things happen. From an outsider's perspective, I don't know percentages. What part of the country is more liberal versus conservative? I tend to feel like I'm an underdog all the time. So I tend to think that more of the country is liberal and therefore, by definition, would not like most of our candidates. How's that?
Well, the liberals don't see it that way. And look at Harry. This wouldn't be an issue if these guys were Democrats. I mean, look, Harry Reid, who cares? No one cares, you know, that Harry Reid is a Mormon, really. I mean, the factor is, it's going to be a factor in the primaries. It's going to be a factor because the evangelical vote, they're never going to get over whatever it is they do not like about us. Never. Even as much as we try and cozy up to them by remaking ourselves for a while as members of the religious right. And you know, it's going to be a factor for Romney because Romney's the front runner. We could run down the field and talk about all his other potential rivals, but Romney's the front runner at this point. And Mormonism is probably one of the most exciting things to say about him. But I have noticed in the coverage of Romney's campaign so far, Mormonism is about the fifth thing they get to. It's not the lead. They bury it. And there's already some kind of prophylactic ethnographic articles out there. We've seen one from The Spectator last week. In the UK. Oh, Mormons, aren't they fabulous? And yes, they're perfect to be president. So I think it may be less of an issue except with evangelicals and only in the primaries.
Right. So in the national election, if someone were to gain the nomination, you think it would be the candidates would would be just on their political positions.
Well, I mean, Mormonism will come up, but it won't be a factor in how folks turn out. It might depress turnout among evangelicals if Romney got the Republican bid. But people are going to split down different kinds of lines.
Cool. Now, Joanna, your notes came in on the tale of Jennifer. Jennifer, had you finished kind of laying out your initial take? Well, I just want to make sure you got done before we turn to Jenny. And then I don't even know, Joanna, were you responding really to Jennifer or just jumping in with yours?
I don't know. I lost track of time there. Sorry. Go ahead. Get on it. Finish your thoughts.
My thoughts are done.
Okay. All right. And Joanna, any more that you wanted to weigh in on, at least that initial bit before I kind of asked?
I think I've said enough for now. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Jenny, what's your general sense of things?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've lived in Wisconsin I grew up in Utah, but I've lived in Wisconsin for the last 16 years. And, you know, we still have Mormon issues here. Like, you know, my daughter still gets trouble, you know, in high school, even with friends, you know, trying to debate her, you know, issues and stuff and telling her she's not a Christian. I mean, there's a lot of people who still really have misconceptions about us. And so I don't know that much has changed on that end. However, with that said, I think that the bigger issue in my opinion, is either one, Romney or Huntsman, is either one conservative enough? And, you know, from talking to my friends who are Mormons, some of them that are Mormons, just even bringing this up to them when I was at a birthday party the other night, and every one of them were like, oh, no, please, not again, you know. I don't know. I'm not even.
What do you mean not again? Like they just don't want to go through it again with Mitt or.
Yeah, I think that, and I know that I can speak for myself. I'm not really interested in Mitt Romney as a candidate.
Right.
I know see him as a front runner, but I don't see him as a front runner. For me, he's not conservative enough.
Right.
And for me, there's things in his voting record and whatever that are an issue. And then I look at the Mormon factor and I look at the prejudice that we have gotten. I mean, just within the last couple of months, my daughter's high school teacher had, was telling some kids in a, you know, it was just class time. So there, she wasn't speaking directly to the class, just to some of the kids and had made the comment that, you know, yeah, there's lots of Mormons in Utah and they're really cultish. And then one of her friends was like, hey, isn't Savannah a Mormon? You know, so,
oh, we get it. We get it too.
You know,
I mean, it's everywhere. We get that too out here in California. It's everywhere.
Yeah, and so I don't think that has really gone away totally. And so I still think that would be a big, huge issue. And especially if Huckabee decides to get in the race again.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And you know, I frankly don't want anyone from last time. I don't want to see any one of them. You know, as far as I'm concerned, all of you stay out.
Well, should we talk about this? Should we talk about the field for a second? Because I think that's one of the only reasons Mitt is a big story is because the field is so, you know, mushy right now. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about Paul Entey?
I have better thoughts on him than I do about any of the other candidates. But again, there's things in Minnesota that, you know, I have watched them, you know, do some tax raising and things like that I'm not. You know, so it's hard to say because, you know, in my mind, I want someone like Chris Christie or Scott Walker. So it's
and Chris Christie's never going to, he swears he's not getting in.
You know, so actually I would love Paul Ryan, who's my congressman right now, but he's, you know, he has sworn that he won't get in either because he's trying to do the budget thing.
Now, Paul Lente's kind of a suburban evangelical megachurch guy. He's not like a Huckabee ordained Southern Baptist minister. You know, I wonder if he'd be softer on us than Huckabee.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm a little unsure about him. I just haven't quite gotten he's a nice speaker and that kind of thing, but I don't know.
Right.
I guess I get that feeling from a lot of the people here. Is we're still waiting to see is someone going to come out of the woodwork and
how are people talking? You know, yeah. How are Mormon conservatives feeling about Palin? I mean, how would she skewer us as LDS people?
Well, the thing that's funny is that none of me and my Mormon friends that follow politics, we're all like, no, don't run. I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
We like her as a person, but we don't want her as a politician. Does that make sense? Like,
she's taking a nosedive in the polls. Yeah.
I'm okay with her being a politician. I just don't think she needs to be the head honcho in charge.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I mean. It's like, none of us are like, yeah, let's run. I mean, we're just kind of like, you know.
Well, let me run another name by you on the roll call. Newt Gingrich, newly made Catholic. Thrice divorced, newly made Catholic, former House Speaker. How do y'all feel about him?
10 years ago, I liked him.
Yeah.
I'm kind of mushy on him. Not totally nay, I guess. I'm not no. Because if push come to shove and he were the candidate against Obama, you can better believe I'd vote for him. But I feel like it's so early that I'm just not. The characters, the candidates that I want aren't in the race. So
okay, Jennifer Haley Barbour has been talking about getting in. How do you feel about Haley Barbour? He's a Presbyterian, by the way. We're doing the religion roll call.
Yeah. Okay, well, I have no idea. I can't say I've honestly heard the name. You want to know who I think ought to run?
Yeah.
Who says he's going to run? I want Donald Trump to run.
Saw that.
Half sarcasm, half truth. A little bit of sarcasm, a little bit of truth.
Okay, the other dark horse that I've heard from Beltway people is Eric Cantor of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Jewish Republican. I've heard that.
I have heard that too. And I'd like to see what he would do. I mean, I have a little bit of interest there. Haley Barbour, not so much. He's not, yeah. I mean, he's okay for the role that he plays. But I'm not that interested in him at this point,
okay.
I guess.
Okay, so, you know, there are three other dark horses are Jeb Bush, Bobby Jindal, Scott Brown, and then we're left with the Mormons.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big Republican primary. It's a big Republican primary. That's how
it is.
It's wide
it
open.
Is. And
it's wide open for guys with great hair.
Well, I think the more conservative you are, the better off you'll be.
Well, let me jump in on the Cantor opening that we had there. Jennifer, when you opened, you said you don't think any other religion would make a difference. When here we have Judaism that would become a factor in a Cantor presidency. What's the difference between negative impressions of Judaism versus negative impressions of Mormonism? Do you really think has Mormonism just remained the one target that still you're not going to get called on if you were to mischaracterize or to demean in any way? Has Judaism risen above the ability to characterize, you know what I'm saying, though?
Yes.
You know, to do an exaggerated portrait of. What's your thought on the Judaism versus Mormonism question?
Generally speaking, I would say, yeah, I think they have risen above it. They're more mainstream. I think a lot of the prejudice that they have received in the past, I don't think they would experience as much as we would. I think most of the country still looks at us as a cult, you know?
Okay, would they experience it, or just no one would dare say it out loud?
Look, the statistics show as a Jew, you're more likely to be a victim of a hate crime, but the approval ratings done by, like, the Pew Forum on research put nationwide approval ratings in like the 80% for Jewish folks, and we're in the 50s.
Well, right. We're tied with Muslims. Can tell who we are when we're walking down the street. They can't, you know, unless you know to look for garments, you don't know.
Right. That's honest. And how do you know? How do you know a Jewish person when they're walking down the street?
You don't, but
yeah,
people.
Okay.
People assume based on the spelling of your name, the yeah, color of your hair. That I mean, they make assumptions.
Yeah.
That you can't necessarily make the same assumptions the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of polls and things like that, there was also a new book called American Grace that came out recently, and it did mention that Mormons are the second least favored religions, and we score only a little bit higher than Muslims as far as just the national thing. We all seem to think favorably of Buddhists, and I'm not looking at the stats, but it went down the road, and it was just Mormons barely above Muslims. Is there any sense that there's change on the horizon? Would, for instance, two diverse Mormon candidates for the GOP nomination make a difference in sort of this mistrust of Mormonism, at least the angle that comes at the mistrust from this idea that Mormonism is monolithic, that there'd be fear that Salt Lake would have undue influence upon a candidate's, once somebody was in office, their positions and whatnot. Would there be some help in that area to have a Huntsman and a Romney really go at each other and just define themselves against each other?
I personally don't think so. I mean, we have many churches around here that actively preach in their sermons, you know, things about Mormons and that aren't true, you know, they're just kind of feeding right. The perpetual thing. And so, I mean, I still get asked the wives question, you know, I mean,
yeah. they're asked about where my horns are, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, there's still, we're like Joanna had said, we're still viewed as a cult. So, I mean, you know, my neighbors know we're not.
Are we viewed as a, are we viewed that way though by enough? I mean, there's probably going to be what, your 10 or 15% of people that you're not going to persuade whatsoever. Well, but is there a soft group? Yeah.
There's the evangelical approach, but generally, I mean, I was listening to sports radio the other day following Jimmermania, and, you know, again, someone calls and says, whatever with their cult. And it just makes my stomach hurt every time I hear it. It is still a part of, you know, there's the evangelical strain where they have a specific theological objection. They're fighting us as part of saving souls. And then there's just the general garden variety public. But I mean, I think it would be great to have both Romney and Huntsman in, because something I'm encountering from non-LDS people who don't think we're a cult is this sense that we are monolithic and that the church is very heavily invested in Romney's campaign. And that Romney and the church have this identity relationship, and having two of us in would be a real eye-opener. There are differences among Mormons. Just because someone's Mormon doesn't mean they have the full faith and backing of the LDS church, you know, that there's not some secret high-level coordination, you know. Because I don't know. I don't have any good evidence on this, but, you know, I can't believe that the church, I mean, it would be great for Mormonism in its public profile were there to be a Mormon president, but I can't believe the church would invest itself that heavily in Romney's campaign.
Well, and what you kind of said, though, is if somebody ran, we could use that whole concept of, well, look at Harry Reid being so diametrically opposed to either of those other two, and use that on a national scale to show how the church wouldn't be involved in what they do.
Exactly. Right. Three white guys with great hair, aren't we diverse?
There you go. Yeah, that definitely what you just brought up, Jennifer, is true. We had Romney and Reid is certainly two of the most high profile folks out there, and it wasn't scoring that many points. I'm just wondering, with the GOP being, you know, kind of considering it separate from the national perception, if having a Huntsman come in and at least do a good job to appeal to the centrist or the left part of the GOP nomination, which appears to be where he would be. His record is to support gay rights. His record was to loosen alcohol laws or liquor laws in Utah when he was governor. He's said in Fortune magazine, he says, "I can't say that I'm overly religious." I'm quoting here from an article. He noted that his children attend Catholic schools and that one of his adopted daughters was born Buddhist and another Hindu. And then he is quoted as saying, "I get satisfaction from many different types of religions and philosophies." So here we'd have a Mormon that would sort of be a Mormon in your cultural or ethnic sort of sense. This idea of, you know, emerging from the Mormon people without being the strong identification with the Mormon faith the way you have with Romney, who has served as a stake president and in other high-profile positions within church. What do you guys think? Would that be a factor if at least it, I don't know, what is there? Is there only 10% of the people that might be in play as far as, you know, trying to change perceptions?
Well, I don't know. I think that's an interesting question, because if you look at the GOP, in my opinion, is going through not a cleaning of house, but it's really, they're trying to figure out where they are right now, I think. And,
yep.
You know, they've just had a change of leadership at the national level. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think Wisconsin is so interesting in this, because the former state Republican leader here in Wisconsin is now the national leader. Reince Priebus was just elected in the last couple of months. And what I find interesting about that is that he really listened to what the what was going on in the state and helped back candidates that the people were looking for. Does that make sense? Because Wisconsin is very mixed bag. Like, you know, we vote in Republican governors, but then we vote, you know, Democratic in presidential elections. And so we're all over the map, and there's a deep religious base here of Catholics, and, you know, there's an evangelical thread here as well. But so I'm interested to see how conservative the GOP is wanting to be on that, because I think that's going to be more of a factor necessarily than maybe if they're Mormon. Does that make sense? Like,
So would you say in some ways what you're almost saying is having a Huntsman come in who would definitely be one of your most liberal Republicans, mm-hmm. or certainly there, would just having him go deep into the primary be a positive factor in the sense of helping the GOP decide who it is and how much of the Tea Party will really win in the end, and how much they'll start to think about electability on a national stage, and who would, you know, begin to be able to compete with Romney, compete with Obama, etc.
I mean, really, mm-hmm. though, really, what, Jenny, what do you give his chances? I mean, really.
Whose chances?
Huntsman's chances.
I mean, I don't think they're very good, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, like I said, that was the one thing that was interesting that just went on in the last year here in Wisconsin was, you know, as long as I've lived here, we have been blue. I mean, we've been a pretty blue state, and there's been some times where the GOP has controlled part of the legislature or part of the Senate or something, you know, one or the other as far as state government goes. But we had, I mean, obviously we had both of our senators from Wisconsin were both very liberal Democrats. So it's been interesting because to watch the change in Wisconsin and see how the people have, over the last couple of years, really just done a roundabout face and changed what they wanted almost, you know? I mean, I never thought I'd see the day that Russ Feingold would get ousted out of Wisconsin. And let me tell you, I was jumping up and down with joy when he did, but it was shocking. It was still shocking, you know? So, I feel that's why I'm interested to see what the national GOP does, because Reince Priebus was really talented. I mean, we were the only state that went completely red, in the 2010 elections. I mean, we managed to switch every local, you know, government just about over to Republican.
Do you really think it's a long-term switch, or was it just the mood of the country?
You know, I don't know. It's hard to say because there are pockets where they are heavily liberal, like obviously in Madison, and parts of Milwaukee where there's some high, you know, where there's just the demographics are just a little different, but I think it depends on Scott Walker. And I think it depends on what plays out. I mean, already he's gotten, you know, he just announced this weekend that, you know, he's already You know, it's like 100 jobs or 500 jobs, you know, that there's some plant coming to the area. So it really, I think, depends on the jobs, because the jobs here is a really big factor. And
the economy is not going to get better for 5 years, you know, and we're looking at 2012. And, you know, nationwide, it's going to be a question for the Republicans, I think, of, you know, do people still believe the Tea Party is the right faction of the party to be advancing mm-hmm. economic interests? And I don't know how that's going to play out at all.
I think it's all cyclical. I think, okay, so once everybody is happy where things are and they're feeling good about things, which might be, you know, after the economy's better 5 years from now, we might be heavily conservative until then. But then everybody will just kind of get complacent again, and then we'll go the other direction. It just, it, you know, it kind of mm-hmm. goes back and forth.
I mean, I will tell you that a friend, folks close to the Obama campaign tell me that the only folks that they're afraid of are Huckabee and Huntsman at this point, which surprises mm-hmm. me. And I think Huntsman has a long way to go in terms of national name recognition. I think he's got some peccadillos from his past, you know.
Glenn Beck's been helping him out for a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is Glenn Beck's?
He gets on and talks about how he goes to the Huntsman Institute and how wonderful it is. I mean, he doesn't talk specifically about Junior, but he's getting the name out there.
Just the name. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, national name recognition, he's got a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, just to steer us and make sure that we're kind of focusing back on the Mormons stuff rather than just general national election things. Well, first of all, let me add one more thing. There was just an article in the last couple of days where the chairman of the Horizon Political Action Committee, which is which calls itself the campaign in waiting for Ambassador John Huntsman, because Huntsman is not allowed until he's finished his term as ambassador to make any, you know, moves or anything at all. He's actually arguing now, or at least he's put it in a most recent email to those that are supporting the PAC, that Huntsman is most likely even a candidate for 2016. So 2012, I think, is not their big goal, but I think they definitely want to build something with him. And I do think if he gets in there and scores the point, he can do that. He can play that role that Jenny's calling for to help clarify which direction the Republican Party wants to go. And I find him to be a pretty attractive candidate, and certainly I would sleep better at night were he to get the nomination versus some of the other people that we've talked about.
Liberals love Huntsman. That's his problem.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, and then the fact that he's got a role
in the Obama administration, you know, so he's too bipartisan already by that means. And then, of course, we have Romney, completely unrelated to his Mormonism, with what they call Romney Care, you know, the Massachusetts healthcare thing that basically.
Can I just try and touch on something? We don't want none of us really are excited to talk about Romney. Have you noticed that in the last half hour?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, that's fine. But he's certainly going to be advancing.
I just want to explore why. Dan, is that okay? Can we explore why we don't want to talk about Mitt Romney? Are we all embarrassed?
I'm not embarrassed. I just don't want to have to vote for him. I mean,
because he's not conservative enough.
He's not conservative enough. And that's why I was saying I'm interested to see if, because I think the last couple of years people have had to decide, are they going to, you know, because I feel like that middle ground is, you know, you've got Obama who is really far to the left here. And so, I don't know.
You want to hear it from a liberal? Obama's very conservative for liberals.
Well, I know. I mean, I know that for some liberal factions he is. But a lot of people in Wisconsin have really... I think that played a factor in the election this year, because they were whoa, that's not what we were voting for. They didn't, you know, so.
Sure. Jennifer, what do you think about Romney? Do you like to talk about him?
No.
Do you enjoy the idea of him? Does he spark you at all?
No. I don't like what he did with the health care either. I mean, I think that's really going to – I think that will nail him, quite frankly.
I agree.
Wow, I'm just saying, rut-row, if Mitt Romney has not got Mormon conservatives lined up, whoa.
I would vote for John Huntsman over Romney.
Whoa, really?
Really.
Wow.
I like See, this is where I'm kind of weird. I like the fact that he can be liberal in his thinking. The fact that he's Mormon, hopefully, tells me that I can trust him to be a decent, honest man in what he does. But I like the fact that he's not, okay, this isn't politically correct, brainwashed by the upper levels. How's that?
I don't even know what that means.
Are you revealing something about your own Mormonism and how conservatively you hold your Mormon faith?
There you go.
Okay. I got you now.
Your politics versus how conservative you are in your religious positions. Yes, very interesting. Well, fun. I just, we have probably 15, 20 minutes left is all I want to take this podcast any further. So let's switch. Okay, I mean, Joanna, do you have anything else you needed to say or wanted to say about Romney and why nobody on this panel is excited about him?
I think nobody except for Romney's campaign is excited about Romney, and that's sad.
His fiscal credentials, his Olympic credentials, the ability to, you know, bring a business perspective and whatnot into the thing, it just doesn't work. Is it because of the flip-flopping?
I don't know, but all I know is no one gets a glee. No one gets a sense of glee when they talk about Mitt Romney. And it takes that kind of fire to fight the battle he's going to have to fight.
Right. There's a lack of charisma. Yeah.
A couple of my friends were even like, oh, really? Not again. I mean, and I think I think that, you know, and some of them are they're more independent. They're not necessarily conservative. And I think I think like Jennifer said, there's a few things against him, like the healthcare thing, and I do think the Mormon thing's a factor.
Poor guy. I'm just shaking my head. I wish him well. I really do.
Oh, I do just, too. I think he seems like, you know, great guy.
Yeah, he's a little bit like Al Gore, you know, as much as you may like him, he doesn't build a fire in your belly kind of thing.
Yeah.
Prop 8 and its potential impact on Mormon perception nationally. Would you say that perhaps the Prop 8 battles over the last few years and the church's influence in that outcome has now made Mormonism more identified with, you know, pro-marriage or pro-traditional marriage or anti-gay or however you'd want to call it versus maybe what was that strangeness about polygamy, uncertainty about, you know, whether or not it's Christian or whatnot. Is the identity shifted of Mormonism in a national spotlight because of Prop 8, and how would that play out as far as any viable candidacies? Anybody want to try?
I think it's just given us a double whammy. Instead of having just one thing to pick on us about, now they have two.
Well, who's the they? Wouldn't the Prop 8 switch have helped maybe in the area of the GOP, especially the conservative ranks?
I'm not really looking at it necessarily from a political perspective, just more or less. I mean, I had, you know, a friend of a friend came in to do a dance show that I did over the weekend, and all he could do was complain. He didn't know I was LDS, and so he was complaining the entire time about being in Utah and being around these people who, you know, helped support, and obviously I think he was gay. But, I mean, it was just kind of like, okay. We've opened the door for one more thing for the people who already think we're a cult to just to pick on us about because they got so involved.
So because of the effectiveness of the Mormon involvement, that adds to the cult thing. Interesting. Others?
I agree on that. I think more people watch Big Love than follow California politics, you know. And I think polygamy is still the number one association people have when they think of Mormons. But I think there's a fascinating connection between, you know, polygamy and Prop 8. I was thinking about this, getting ready for tonight, and there was a Mormon Stories podcast John DeLynn did with Damon Smith, and Damon talked about, you know, the the political tactics of doublespeak and kind of insularity that were developed, you know, within Mormon culture during polygamy times. And I really saw those play out, you know, during the Prop 8 campaign too, kind of like, you know, it was, we set ourselves up to be outed as this secret hand of influence behind the scenes with all the Mormon donors responding to the instructions. You know, the way we went at it, you know, set us up for this kind of drama of revelation of secret influence that stoked all that old cult imagination stuff. And you know, so I don't know. I think polygamy still ranks higher, but I think insularity is our number one enemy.
Thank you for being more eloquent with my point.
See, in Wisconsin, we didn't really follow it much. I mean, we didn't really get, you know, a lot of coverage, and it's probably because, you know, the Mormon percentage out here is a lot smaller. But several years ago in Wisconsin, we had a similar type of issue on a ballot. And it was interesting because, you know, it was about marriage, you know, and I can't remember the exact details of it because it was so long ago, but at that time, a lot of people that came out and voted for it, you know, all of the conservatives were thinking that the Republicans were going to win. But it was interesting because the people that came out and voted for the, you know, marriage bill they all voted for our Democratic governor. So it was interesting because you had this marriage bill that passed, you know, making it, you know, because that was going on in the news here. I want to say it must have been 2004, maybe. So I don't know. Like out here, we don't ever feel that because there's a lot of people out here who still aren't on the gay marriage bandwagon. So
okay, and so seeing it on a national political scene, none of you, other than maybe ramping up a little bit the cultic aspect of it, you're not seeing that Prop 8 would have scored points with the GOP far right.
No.
Okay.
No.
So no shift at all. No. So Mormonism's in worse shape in some ways now than it was back in 07, 08, you guys are saying, because of Prop 8.
Well, I guess in Wisconsin, I don't know that it's any different because I don't know that anybody really associated the Mormons with that. Does that make sense? At least here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Out in Utah and out in California, I'm sure that was, you know, because of the Prop 8 going on in California and, you know, the large percentage of Mormons in Utah. But out here, it was almost never mentioned, really. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Let me throw one more out there. Recently, in the last week or so, Utah passed a series of immigration laws that basically looked like things were shaping up to be an Arizona type enforcement law where they'd want to, you know, police to, you know, be able to question anybody's status and whatnot. And under the church's influence, apparently a good solid couple of weeks of hard lobbying, what was passed as part of this sequence of bills was sort of a guest worker visa, you know, obtain sort of what they might call the Utah green card law. And now it seems to me that though I'm personally in favor of, you know, advancing the discussion in this direction and things like that, this is going to be another issue where Mormonism is going to take a hit in the GOP if they're able to say the Mormon Church, you know, has this influence upon Utah. And in this case, they've gone the wrong direction in the sense of, you know, being more amenable to hosting non-documented people within the United States. Does that make any sense? Did I frame that all right? What do you guys think? Is this going to be a player or another hit? Or is it just going to show that Mormonism is completely lost itself as far as any kind of consistent message?
What? What do you mean lost itself in terms of consistent message?
I mean, a fairly progressive action here in most people's minds on immigration and very conservative in its actions in California. So,
but I think you have to look at the motivation for why they're doing it. I don't think the national GOP will, but when I read the article that was saying that 75 to 80% of the Spanish-speaking wards in Utah are filled with undocumented members, and the church is facing huge declines in the regular wards, it wouldn't behoove them to get rid of all of their members, especially the ones that are growing at the fastest rate.
Would that be lost, though, on the national political scene? All that would be drawn is, so what would be drawn is Mormonism are, you know, not hardliners anymore on immigration.
Well, but you know what?
Would that hurt the GOP sense, especially?
There was a complex of bills passed. There were four bills passed. One of them was the enforcement-only Sandstrom bill, which was the hardcore grizzly bear, you know, alleged racial profiling bill. You know, there was another one. They're going to sue the federal government to draw the federal government into enforcement. I mean, the package that was passed with strong church influence defies simple characterization. It can't be profiled as an Arizona package. It's by no means uniformly soft on immigrants, although some people who hew to more of a Russell Pierce position will see it that way. They're really just setting a model for complex, you know, for comprehensive immigration reform. They're trying to draw the feds in to get that going. So, I mean, I don't know that it's going to be easy to tar Mormon candidates with, you know, a brush, you know, that's in the hands of folks just in Utah. You know, that might be too many dots to connect. I don't know.
I kind of agree. I just wanted to throw it out there because it is newsmaking, and it does seem like it has certainly a Mormon piece to it. So, all right, the final thing I want to talk about is we have this character out there, and his name's Glenn Beck, and he's LDS, and I, you know, whether you like him, hate him, consider him a showman versus, you know, a serious political figure or whatever you'd want to do, he is Mormon, and it's well known that he's Mormon. How does his influence, his, you know, high ratings and his ability to get media coverage and everything they do, is that a player with Mormonism, or has he transcended his Mormonism in some sort of way to just really be Glenn Beck, the political guy? You know, what do you think? Does he help, hurt, influence perception of Mormonism on a national stage? Who'd like to go?
I'll go. I kind of think I'm in Utah, so it's a little bit different. But in my little world, I'd like to think that most people don't think about the fact that he's Mormon when they're listening to him. However, I think everybody who wants to point out all the negative things go right to him all the time. I think I've never heard of anybody going, huh, Glenn Beck's a Mormon. I think I want to go check out what Mormonism is. You know what
Someone made a website. Someone made a website 2 years ago that tried to do that, just that. Like, it was an LDS fan of Glenn Beck made a website that's like, hey, you like Glenn Beck? Check out this. Like, and it linked right through to LDS.org. It was really funny.
And did it get like 50 visitors?
Exactly. They didn't have the counter on the outside.
Well, no, I mean, the end of the Glenn Beck conversion story video does that same. If you like Glenn Beck's faith, that, you know, then go to LDS.org. But it's like the only people watching that are people who are already LDS.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. I find it interesting because I didn't know Glenn Beck was a Mormon until a couple of years ago. So, I mean, I didn't even watch him when he was on CNN or anything. I had never seen his show. And I think the first time I watched him was a couple of years ago, and I've just sporadically watched him. But I would wager that there's a lot of people who don't know he's a Mormon. I have my husband's aunt. We were at a birthday dinner a few months ago, and someone mentioned Glenn Beck and something about Mormons, and she was like, "What? He's a Mormon?" And she's not a member of the church, and we were all like, yeah, he's a Mormon. And she was like, oh, well, that explains a lot of things, all of that prophecy stuff. And, you know, so she understood, you know, now where he was coming from.
I didn't know
he was a Mormon. And so I don't know that it's necessarily just general knowledge.
Well, see, his other guy on his show was Mormon too, and I just figured that one out like, maybe a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, nobody ever talks about the other guy being Mormon too.
Well, the two of them with the plan, you know, his thing where he talked about both of them coming to it sort of separately through prayer and faith and scripture study
and all that stuff.
So it sort of came up. With Glenn Beck, I think what we had was in his conversion story and his overcoming alcoholism and you know, cocaine addiction and things like that, he played up, you know, the fact that he searched for faith and this was the faith he settled on. And then I think he kind of went kind of quiet with it, but it's what you just said about your friend saying, oh, that makes a lot of sense now with prophecy. He is using a lot, he is drawing a lot on Mormon pieces.
Yeah.
So he's got the Clarence Gauzin connection. He's got the whole Constitution hanging by a thread, which would, you know, deserves its own, you know, the White Horse prophecy deserves its own topic sometime just because it's so interesting. You know, the veneration of the founding fathers, that the Constitution is divinely inspired, certainly some of his, you know, preparing for the end times, all those types of things are definitely Mormon themes. So in some ways he does have all these Mormon connections, but he isn't explicitly going out there all the time saying, I'm Mormon.
Yeah. I talked about him. I was on a panel about him last summer at Sunstone, and, you know, I said back then, I think he's peaked now. I think he has peaked, you know, and that was last summer, 2010. And, you know, I think restoring honor was the beginning of the decline for him. I think, you know, he's continuing to do a lot of religious talk, but it doesn't get a lot of traction. And, you know, I think Glenn's jumped the shark. I hope.
I think his religious talk has scared a lot of listeners away. I mean, he's gotten real religious recently and his ratings have declined to shift.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I like him best when he's just talking about, you know, the issues and things that are going on that you might not know about, you know.
Yeah.
But when he starts weaving in all of the other stuff.
He got nutty last summer. He got so nutty with the stones, with the prophecy, the Back Creek stones, with Native Americans and lost tribes of Israel. And holy moly, he got nutty.
See, I don't watch him or listen to him. And, I mean, enough to know. I don't even know what that is. I mean, I don't remember hearing him, but. You know, it was interesting because, oh gosh, I want to say 6 months ago, one of the local talk show radio hosts out here talked about him and about his factor and his gloom and doom thing and had people calling in because they just wanted to get an idea of what people thought of him. And it was interesting to hear the different perspectives of things. You know, some people were like, he stresses me out and, you know. You know, others are like, it's too gloomy. But others were just like, oh, I like the information he gives. So it was kind of a mixed bag. It was interesting to hear.
Yeah. I think there's a lot, too, that I think, you know, outrage is really difficult to sustain for months on months and months. It's also difficult to program. And you can just see him reaching further and further and further. You know, it's like a month ago he said that Reform Jews were like radical Islamic terrorists, which is just crazy. It just boggles the imagination. I mean, he's reaching, you know, he's reaching.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so to summarize on the Glenn Beck situation, nobody on the panel at least sees him as a net positive or negative for Mormonism. He's more of his Mormonism is a non-factor except perhaps with just a very few amount of people. Would that be the consensus here?
Yeah, my husband calls him a sideshow attraction.
Okay. we're Glenn Beck to back up one of the two Mormon candidates. My guess is more like you throw in with Romney. Would that be a true boost, or would that also be a neutral factor?
Not good.
Well, not good for you, Joanna Nash.
No, not good. Not good for Romney. Not good for Romney.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know that it would be a plus or a minus, really.
Okay. I disagree with both of them, actually. I think. For Glenn Beck's audience, if he were to come up behind anybody, that they would follow him from, but I mean, not like his audience, well, I don't know, 6 million, I don't know, whatever he's down to now.
But a percentage of them would say, if Glenn really has weighed it, that's enough for me. The thinking has been done.
I think some would, yeah.
Okay, well, I would lean a little bit with you, Jennifer, that way too. The other thing that came up in one of my reading points about Glenn Beck is, if this time around some really ridiculous attacks on Romney or on Mormonism came, you know, in the guise of, you know, somebody taking on Romney, would Glenn Beck just
I'll have none of that. Would he have an influence on being able to shut that down?
Hmm. I think he might, actually. I think that if that did happen and he chose to defend Mormonism, at least with his viewers, that would go a long way, which I tend to think a lot of his viewers are more... Well, I don't know. I guess I can't say what his viewers are, so never mind on that. But it might make a difference.
Joanna,
nothing. Just tattoo it on your forehead. Nothing is going to move evangelicals. Nothing.
Okay. So that percentage
is lost. Ever.
Yep. Well, cool. Well, let's put the Glenn Beck discussion on the table for now. Perhaps another podcast down the road, we can talk more about Glenn Beck as this interesting character. And we certainly welcome any discussions that anyone wants to have on our Mormon Matters blog for this show. Again, that's mormonmatters.org, and we hope everyone will respond to the podcast and keep these issues going in a good constructive discussion. So, all right, guys, I think we've covered everything that we at least planned to do. How about I try a little summary here? I'll do my best John DeLynn impression here, where he's a great summarizer, and I'd love you to, you know, respond with any different nuancing that you'd like to add. So on the general question of whether or not Mormonism is in better shape nationally than it was before, in other words, will things be easier for a Mormon candidate this time around? It seemed like I had unanimous across the board that things will not be any easier if we have not improved our public image whatsoever. Is that fairly accurate for all of you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And, right. So.
And was I hearing a few of you think? Okay. Was I hearing that a few of you sense that it might even be worse?
No, I don't think it'll be.
I don't know that it's worse. I just don't think it's any better.
Yep.
Okay.
Look, if it were someone sexier than Mitt, we'd be better off. Sorry.
Okay. So if we had a really dynamic candidate, you're saying. Mm-hmm.
No, she said sexy because there is statistics, psychological statistics. The better looking you are, the more likely you are to get voted in.
Well, I mean, Mitt's fairly handsome, but I did mean more dynamic. I was just being kind of colloquial.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's what I thought you meant, kind of charisma too. So, yeah. But yeah, handsome guy. I mean, I'll have to say, if you put Romney and Huntsman up there, they're going to be the best two looking guy, the two best good looking candidates.
If you like that tall, lots of teeth, great hair thing. Not all of us like tall, great hair.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. All right.
No offense to John DeLynn.
There you go. All of a sudden, you know, the editing will be taken out of my hands and we'll have some things going on there. So that's funny. All right. So, and the Romney candidacy doesn't excite anyone. The Huntsman candidacy is a little bit intriguing, but no one here would say that they feel like he's a viable 2012 candidate. That'd be there. And I was at least trying to push the agenda, and I don't know how far I got, that at least a good Huntsman run, or at least him becoming more of a national figure, might help in that task that Jenny was mentioning of the Republican Party trying to define itself, trying to figure out its identity, trying to figure out how much Tea Party, how much, you know, Christian right, and other things that they'll put up with, and, you know, if they can produce a candidate that would be nationally viable against Obama. At least Huntsman is somewhat of an intriguing figure for that reason. Would you guys say that's fairly accurate?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, good. Prop 8, we felt like maybe those in California and perhaps Utah or those among the progressive Mormons at least are, like, you know, feeling this strong identification between the Mormon Church and Prop 8. Jenny is letting us know at least that the Mormon involvement in that really wasn't a player there, and she's speculating that's probably the case nationally, that this whole Mormon Prop 8 anti-gay pro-traditional marriage really has a net zero effect, probably. Helps with some groups, hurts with others. Would that be fair?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're known as being anti-gay. I don't think people can connect it to specifically to Prop 8 and the specific nature of the church's involvement.
Okay.
Yes, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't even know that they think of it as anti-gay out here, but
For some constituencies, they're going to be very aware of the church's role. Others, it won't matter.
Right.
And so we might gain in some areas and lose in others, but overall, nationally, we're about the same. And then we kind of felt like the immigration piece, it's too early to call. It's a little bit too many dots to connect to whether or not the church's involvement in at least trying to get a national debate going on some kind of worker visa or guest worker program goes. It's just too early to call. We'll have to let that one play itself out. Would you guys say that that was fair?
Yep.
Okay, and then finally, yeah. the beloved Glenn Beck. He's jumped the shark. Some of you, people like his, at least the information they're getting from him, your sense that perhaps some of his decline has been when he's gone more into this prophetic mode and I'm feeling called by the Spirit. I'm just the tool in this crazy hand, you know, of God that's, you know, seems to have me in this chair. Therefore, I'm being used by God. You're thinking that's actually hurting his ratings, hurting his influence.
Yeah. Doesn't stop me from listening, but overall, yeah.
Okay. And the Mormon connection is not that strong in that many people's minds. Even those of us who are Mormon, we recognize catchphrases. We recognize, you know, sort of, I don't know, currents within the stream of Mormonism that basically, you know, Glenn Beck is tied into. But you're saying nationally that's not that big a deal.
Yeah, I would say that.
Okay.
I don't think it's that everybody knows he's Mormon.
Okay. Well, let's do this. Let's use those summaries, and that I guess I didn't do terribly on those. Let's let those be the...
You did good.
Yay! I'm learning. I'm getting better. How special. Let's use those positions then as sort of an invitation to those who disagree with us, who have some strong opinions that said we were dead wrong on any of those. Let's have them jump in with the podcast discussion at MormonMatters.org.
All right.
Cool. Now, did one of you were about to say something right when I interrupted, I think. So who wanted to say something? No? Okay. Sorry, I thought I heard somebody talking as I was talking. Anyway, let's get out of here, guys. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Mormon Matters podcast, MormonMatters.org. There is a button there that we encourage you to push when you get to the website. It is a chance for you to subscribe to the podcast. Similar to Mormon Stories, this podcast, we're definitely trying to make it a regular part of your life that you value, and for $5 or $10 a month or even higher, we welcome you to subscribe, and that will definitely help us be able to continue to release at least one podcast a week. So I'll make that appeal to you, and thank my guest, Jennifer in Ogden. Thank you.
Thanks.
Jenny in Wisconsin. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And Joanna, our stalwart, our regular, our mix-it-upper. Thank you.
Hey, thanks to Jennifer and Jenny. That was totally pleasant.
Good.
Yes, it was. Thanks.
Good. We hope to have you guys back. So keep watching and encourage all three of you along with me. We'll watch the podcast discussion on the blog and weigh in and clarify and do all that stuff. So, again, thank you very much and good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.